On this very special episode, David and Foster talk about Tombstone. Yeehaw! Giddy up!
Should we just get into it?
Should we try? I think we should.
We're talking Tombstone.
Tombstone! By popular request, or I should say popular demand from some obscurians that were outraged, irate, and just disheartened that I had not seen Tombstone. I don't know. You hadn't seen it before, right?
So here's the thing. I feel like I'd seen it kind of in bits and pieces when it was like on TNT, you know, back when, you know, we used to watch, you had movies on cable that were edited not only for commercials, but for content. So I'm sure it was not the full Tombstone experience. And and so I had a great time watching this, and I got to say, I'm a fan.
Yeah, we'll give the spoiler horn, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Although you basically just don't, I mean, you shouldn't listen to this episode if you care about it.
Spoilers.
Oh. Nice. Tombstone spoilers. Thematic stingers.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. We watched this last night. Our friend of the pod, Tim Marks, popped in for a little bit, and we did an Amazon watch party. And I'm glad I looked, because it was like, since it was disappearing from Amazon Prime, within hours of us chatting about it.
I texted my dad because I was like, I thought he would like the movie. He's a kind of a Western fan, and he hadn't seen it. And I was like, oh, you'd like it. And he goes, oh, where can I watch it? And I said, Amazon Prime, but it's for like 5 more hours because it's going away. So I'm eager to see if it'll become available somewhere I guess I could look now and see if it's available anywhere, because it's probably left.
Yeah, I mean, you can rent it at this point, but you know, for
yeah, of course.
$4 digital rental. And I highly encourage folks who haven't seen it to do that. David, you had said that you usually aren't a big fan of Westerns, but you really enjoyed Tombstone.
Yeah, I'd say that's my like overall verdict of my experience, is that I haven't seen many Westerns, mostly because I just don't care for them. I have a hard time getting into them. There's only so long I can look at a grungy man standing in the high street of an old West town, just like with his hand hovering around his belt, staring kind of indefinitely into the abyss.
If you got a problem with hand hovering, sweaty, greasy men, and specifically a man who looks like he's about to drop dead any moment, you will have a hard time with Tombstone.
Yes. I mean, so here's the thing, though, is like, that's what I wanted to say. All that being said, I actually really enjoyed this movie. And I think for a few reasons. One major one, which we can get into at some point, is acting, was performances.
Yes.
Were quite outstanding. I think cinematically it was really, really nice. Mm-hmm. It was like a beautiful movie to watch. Even in HD, you and I exchanged some comments about the last night about the change, like noticing some things with it being in high definition. And then just like the story, I was pretty unfamiliar. You know, a lot of the Westerns are just like fake, fictional, made up stories, but this is sort of, you know, somewhat as accurate as they can be with a lot of artistic liberties and stuff, but based on real people of Wyatt Earp. So that was cool too, because I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, I did not. Speaking of the acting, I mean, I feel like just the cast alone is insane. And like, of course I knew Kurt Russell was in this movie. Of course I knew Val Kilmer was in this movie. I was kind of vague on everyone else, and it turns out,
yeah, that was it for me. That was the line. I knew those two. And it turns out
everybody else is in this movie.
Yes.
I've got the wiki open right now. We've got Sam Elliott, who, of course, you got to have Sam Elliott in your Western. Bill Paxton, I knew.
Oh, yeah.
We knew
because we talked about that before.
Because that came up in one of our mysteries. Powers Booth played the main bad. Michael Biehn played the kind of the secondary bad. I always love seeing Michael Biehn and stuff.
What should I know either of those two people from?
Powers Booth always plays like a general. So if there's a movie with a general, you're likely going to see Powers Booth.
And Powers Booth was Bill, Curly Bill, right?
Yes. Curly.
He was like the kind of leader of the Cowboys, yeah, if yeah. you will.
He was in Sin City. Oh, yeah. I talked about him being a general. He was a colonel in MacGruber.
Okay.
You saw MacGruber. He's just been in, he's been in so much, a lot of television. He's just a guy, you know, you recognize. It's tough to say. Like, he's not like a leading guy. He's always like a support character.
And Michael Biehn, he was great. That was Johnny Ringo.
Yes.
Right?
So Michael Biehn,
he did a great job.
I will always know him as Kyle Reese from the original Terminator. He kind of makes that movie. Like, I love Arnold, but, you know, originally they were going to cast Lance Henriksen as the Terminator. I think he would have done just fine. I think that would have made it just as cool. And of course, Lyndall Hamilton is great in that movie and really shines in T2. But I love seeing Michael Biehn doing stuff because he's just the guy. I have such a childhood attachment to him just from the Terminator. And I don't feel like he got his full due. I don't know if there was like behind the scenes drama or not, but you see him in Tombstone. You see him in The Abyss. I think you see him in The Rock, that Sean Connery, Nick Cage movie. I believe that's a Michael Bay movie. So I always love seeing him, and he kills it in this. So good.
Yeah, he was definitely one of the standouts. I mean, there were so many standouts, and you're right. This is the Ocean's 11 of early 90s Westerns.
Yeah.
Which is a very small category, I know, but like, it is just a packed cast. I mean, you and I both, all of like, what, 4/5 of the way into the movie went, is that Charlton Heston?
Yeah, Charlton Heston shows up at the very
he was
end.
Was just thrown in, yeah.
Yeah, let's see. I think I wasn't super familiar with Dana Delaney, but I've heard, she looked familiar. She played
Josephine, right?
Josephine,
The love interest.
The actress.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize there was like a love story in this, and I felt it was pretty well done too.
Yeah, I thought so too. It was fun and interesting. It didn't feel, maybe superficial. It didn't feel like it felt like it had a little bit of depth to it and interest. You know, it, she was a more unique, interesting character, which was kind of nice to see. Compared to, like, you know, again, I don't have a lot of experience with Westerns, but I do have experience with, like, Indiana Jones, for example, where mm-hmm. it often feels that the you know, the love interests or the female characters don't get a lot of depth to them.
Yeah, I love that character, too. Like, I was all on board with Josephine Marcus. She was an age-appropriate love interest, which I appreciated.
Yes, good point.
While Sam Elliott's character's running around with a woman, like, 25 years his junior, Verge. But I love that she loved her old man. We haven't even mentioned, let's see here, Thomas Hayden Church is in this.
Yeah.
Michael Rooker. Billy Bob Thornton
has
like 2 minutes of screen time. I didn't think it was him because of the costuming or something. I thought that, like, that looks like Billy Bob, but I don't think that's Billy Bob. But no, it was Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, in his younger, so therefore chubbier days.
I guess so. Yeah, this was Sling Blade, I think, was his kind of his breakout role. Billy Zane is in this with like long hair, like looking like super like beautiful. You know,
yeah, kind of a, I feel like a classic Billy Zane role. I mean, this felt very typical Billy Zane of like, I'm the debonair man.
Yeah, I don't feel like I've seen him pre-Titanic. I can't think of any Billy Zane roles.
That's a good point.
Let's see. Yeah, this would be this would be a few years before Titanic. Jason Priestley was in this for a little bit.
Doing the role that, so by the way, I'll note too that we, at one point, I think you and I briefly mentioned or threw back and forth the idea that Jason Priestley plays a guy named Billy, and he's like a younger, sort of scrawnier guy, who affiliates himself with the Cowboys, the villains in the film. And we kind of battered the idea was that Billy the Kid, And I had some texts with my brother-in-law afterwards because he's sort of a Western buff, and both in movies and historical knowledge. And he said, no, he didn't believe that that was supposed to be Billy the Kid, unrelated. But I have some information from him I can share about kind of the history of the herb as well.
We've got breaking news from David's brother.
Okay, I'll share it now. So he just mentioned the key parts of the movie that are not real. And I think there's even been like documentaries about the Earps and about like trying to uncover the, you know, all the details about the shootout at the OK Corral and all that stuff. And so he mentioned that the Ringo Holiday feud was made up. So that kind of feud between those two individuals was made up. There's apparently a missing Earp brother in all of this, that there is a fourth Earp brother, which is
Enos Earp.
Enos Earp.
Enos, I want to be a marshal too. Enos, get out of here.
And most notably, he says, the narrative of what led to the shootout. Mm. So I'm not sure what the true details are of the actual history that led to the shootout of the OK Corral, but I guess not so much.
I'm assuming it was made up in this story. The Cowboys is, I'm assuming that's real because since that name is so boring, I feel like it had to be taken from historical context.
Yeah, could be.
I mean, when did you want something cooler?
It could very well be. I mean,
the Cowboys.
Lame. I mean,
Cowboys are like cattle herders.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I wonder, like, it makes me curious about the origins of the word cowboy, because maybe they were called the Cowboys, and this is, you know, this ties in with some of the etymology of that word.
Yeah, maybe. But who knows? They're the bad guys. They're real bad. They wear red sashes. And you know they're bad because the movie opens with them killing a bunch of people at a Mexican wedding.
Right.
Which is really sad. And they kill the priest, and he has these ill omens for them about a pale horse coming to wreak vengeance.
Yeah, a reckoning.
A restitution, yeah, a reckoning.
That's the last thing that my brother-in-law shared, actually, was the portrayal of the Earps themselves as almost an equal and rival gang. He said that the Earps were equally thuggish and had a lot of moral gray area with mm-hmm. their side businesses, and they were basically a mini gang unto themselves. And he kind of proves his point by saying, like, as you see in the movie, they essentially all deputize themselves.
Yeah.
And then proceed to, and I'm putting air quotes around this, legally murder whoever they wanted. So yeah, they show as much in the movie. You don't really get explanation for how all of a sudden, you know, we get that image, that moment where Sam Elliott bangs the thing up on the wall where he's like, no firearms in this town. And we're like, oh, you are quickly in charge all of a sudden.
Yeah, we don't quite see. Yeah, we didn't see like if there was a leadership sanction thing from either, you know, whoever was in charge, the mayor, or there was that county sheriff dude. Who was basically just had his hand in every pie and just what I think kind of wanted to turn the other way. As long as the money kept rolling in, it was kind of the.
But then by the end of the movie, it seemed he was siding with the Cowboys, essentially, right?
I think so.
Didn't we end up seeing him with, I think with the Cowboys, at least with Billy. We saw him with Billy at one point with Jason Priestley.
Yeah, this was. No, not the mayor.
Oh, you're right. I'm getting them all confused. Because we had a mayor, and we had the marshal,
yes.
The local...
Oh, Terry O'Quinn
guy
is the mayor. You might know him as Locke from Lost.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, I don't remember.
And then we had, what was his name? Fred, who gets killed.
Fred. Oh, yeah, Marshall
the
Fred.
The older man who gets killed by Curly Bill, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's like the local town... Marshall.
Yeah, and it's clear he doesn't really want to do anything. He's very reluctant in his role just because they're used to the Cowboys kind of coming and doing their own thing in Tombstone.
Yeah, they've acquiesced. They let the Cowboys have their place.
Like, Cowboys will be boys.
Yeah, and then the county sheriff who you're right, seems to have his hand in every pocket. So, I mean, I guess the vacuum was available for the Earps to come in and make themselves.
Yeah, and they don't
take charge.
And Wyatt doesn't hesitate at all. He goes into the Oriental Saloon, which has been taken over by a pouty, blusterous baby man, Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah. Who really hates cigar smoke.
He really hates cigar smoke. You know, he was an early adopter of the dangers of secondhand smoke. He's all bark and no bite because Wyatt, because the owner's like, yeah, it's been dead in here since this a-hole, I don't know, can I say that? Since this jerk has been in here. But Wyatt just goes up and slaps him around a little bit. And the stuff, the lines in this movie, some of the greatest lines. Wyatt is staring down Billy Bob. I wrote this one down. He says he's daring him to draw his gun. And, you know, he says, like, I don't know, pull your leather. I dare you. He says, skin that smoke wagon. I wrote that down. He's like, come on, skin that smoke wagon.
I can see that in your eyes.
All right,
man, go ahead. Go ahead, skin it. Skin that smoke wagon and see what happens.
I was like, yes, I am on board with this movie. It was so great.
I think the moment that hit me as like on board with dialogue and writing was, well, I guess like two-thirds of the way through the movie, right, where they're on at the train station and the herbs are theoretically supposed to, or presumably leaving.
Yes, they told the cowboys, you win,
stay behind.
Yeah, you win, we're leaving.
And then we get a little bit of a shootout that happens, and we get that close-up on Kurt Russell. And he's just shouting, and I'm bringing hell with me.
Yes. And I'm bringing hell with me.
That was the moment. Yeah, that was the moment for me that I was like, yeah, I'm into this movie.
Yeah, if you like Kurt Russell shouting, you're going to like this movie.
Oh, yeah, lots of that. That, to me, is a segue into the standout thing, topic of conversation for me in this movie, is Val Kilmer's performance as Doc Holliday.
Absolutely.
And I think we can insert here the clip that sort of inspired us watching this movie.
Not in the best of shape either.
You haven't watched.
Well, yeah, but I saw a picture of him. He looked real skinny.
You would never call him Batman again. You would call him Doc Holliday.
Because it led to the conversation about me not having seen it. Is the clip that we used in the Riley Taylor and Mia Mercado episode, where a guy says, "If you see Val Kilmer in Tombstone, you will always remember him as Doc Holliday and not Batman."
100%. 100%.
Okay, I haven't seen Val Kilmer Batman.
You'd skip it.
But I can't imagine any performance. Yeah, that's what other people have said that too.
It's as memorable as George Clooney as Batman. So.
Oh, see, I didn't mind that so much. It was okay. It's, you're right. I mean, Michael Keaton's better. And then, honestly, Christian Bale's better. But yes, I mean, holy moly, what a performance. I think this movie is worth seeing just for that alone.
Yes, he plays Doc Holliday. He's so badass. And smooth, and he's got a southern accent, you know, a southern gentleman accent.
Yeah, very like South Carolinian drawl kind of accent.
He somehow makes sickness look cool. Like,
right?
It's like, this guy is obviously ill, but man, he's cool. Because he's sweating. He's pale the entire time. He's sweating. I don't know how I came across that fact, but I feel like I read something that, and I don't know what your brother says, but that Doc Holliday was suffering from tuberculosis.
Yeah, I mean, presumably, right? They often call him a lunger, so he's got, you know, a disease of the lungs.
Doc Holliday, he looks amazing. He's a great shootist. He speaks Latin.
He was a dentist. Do you know that? He was. He started a dental practice. I'm reading this on Wikipedia.
Doc Holliday DDS?
He had a degree in dentistry from the Pennsylvania College of Dental Surgery. He set up practice in Griffin, Georgia, but was soon diagnosed with tuberculosis. That's,
oh dear,
hilarious. Yeah. I'm sorry, not hilarious.
I wonder if that is what kind of got him into this lifestyle of high-stakes gambling, because he's, I don't know, do you think he was cheating because he just seems to win every hand? Or is he just that good of a poker player?
You know, it could be. We get that scene where he has been, what they say, he's been like at it for 36 hours or something like that and hasn't slept, and he's been very, very lucky and constantly winning against Ike or whatever his name is, but he's so drunk and like so sweaty with symptoms from TV.
So sweaty, guys, you have no idea how sweaty.
Yeah,
for a Western, sweaty is the default, and he takes it to the next level.
Oh yeah, I mean, you they do such a good job making it very clear that he's, I mean, from the beginning, I said, oh, he looks pale. Is he supposed to look particularly paler? Granted, this is an HD now, right? Who knows how it looked when it was an SD, but.
True. Yeah, true.
But yeah, they did, like, wardrobe and makeup did such a good job making him look sickly and stressed and, like, really having a tough time containing in his, all of his symptoms. I love the story that they gave him. I mean, I don't know how much of it is accurate and whatever, but like, his writing is brilliant. His arc, the story arc that they give him is brilliant, of like being this very conflicted man who ends up doing good things, but all the while he's battling this sort of unfair disadvantage, the cards that he's been dealt, and they do such a good job of that. But yeah, anyway, sorry, yeah. I don't know if he's cheating, but my gut says he's too drunk and hazed from the sickness to be able to cheat, but who knows?
Oh, that's true.
Wikipedia does say, hoping the climate in the American Southwest would ease his symptoms, he moved to that region and became a gambler, a reputable profession in Arizona that day.
Okay, so I'm going to throw kind of a little wrench in this.
Okay.
And that is, I never knew Val Kilmer as Batman. I've always known Val Kilmer as Mad Mardigan from Willow.
Okay, I have not
seen David, that. Have you seen Willow?
I have not seen Willow.
That's going to be next on your list, if I can put that out there.
All right.
It is a Ron Howard fantasy film in the vein of, like, Star Wars. It's very fun, very funny.
I'm super on board.
I think it still holds up.
All of these things you're saying.
Warwick Davis, my friend, is the lead, playing Willow, 18 years old.
Oh, wow.
Right? Because Return of the Jedi, he played, what, Wicket? He was just a kid. He was, like, 14 or something.
That's amazing.
12, 13.
Well,
it's crazy.
I'm super on board. Willow. Love space. I love Ron Howard. I love comedies or funny things.
Well, it's fantasy, sorry.
Sure.
But yeah. It's like, it's got that Star Wars, just like kind of delight.
Yeah, I'm on board.
Fun thriller. But I've always known him as Mad Mardigan.
Okay.
But Mad Mardigan is pretty, kind of similar to Doc Holliday. I mean, he's not as like sophisticated, but he's charming. He's kind of witty. He is kind of like a brute, but he's very funny.
Well, I will say quite a bit of demand, that same popular demand that made us watch Tombstone, is also demanding that I see, because I believe you have, but I have not seen Top Gun. So I need to see
it's
that.
It's been
as well.
A minute. I think that would be a good one to like watch with people and not take as seriously.
Sure.
Because it's a wonderful time capsule of the 80s and early Tom Cruise. And it's just like wonderful cheesy music and shots of motorcycles and just like all the shots of the fighter jets, you know. It's almost a propaganda film.
Okay, sure.
Because, you know, it was the U.S. Air Force or maybe the U.S. Navy or both helped develop it.
Oh, interesting.
And,
okay.
And they've even said recruitment soared after Top Gun premiered.
Wow, I imagine so.
So, but beautifully shot, and I don't know. I would be willing to go when we both get vaccinated. I'd be willing to go see Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah, I mean, I think all the more reason I would love to just have like a goofy, silly watch, fun watch of Top Gun, the first one, the original,
yeah.
and then go be able to go watch that in the theaters when it comes out. Yeah.
And of course, Val Kilmer.
Exactly.
Also in Top Gun.
Right. So I know some people know
him.
I love
Val Kilmer.
Yeah. Some people know him from that as well, or really kind of that's his, maybe a more iconic role for people for Val Kilmer. But holy moly, if he didn't just blow me away in this role. I mean, Kurt Russell, of course, great actor. It was very well done. Really enjoyed Sam Elliott and Bill Paxton and everything. We got to see Bill Paxton's death as referenced in the Dead Body Guy episode of Audio Obscura.
Yeah, and it was everything it was made out to be.
Yeah, it was tearful, it was intense, it was beautifully done. Well done, Bill Paxton.
I was a little disappointed, and maybe that this was their goal, but that we don't know who exactly shot Bill Paxton and Sam Elliott. It's during this like major thunderstorm. And just like a shot just like comes through the window for Bill Paxton. We don't actually see what happens to Sam Elliott.
Yeah, I guess we don't really know any of the details of which of the cowboys, which of the gang came into town to do those ill deeds that night of the storm. That's a good point. I don't know that I would say I was disappointed by it, because they do, I think they do a really good job in the film of making the cowboys, you get individuals, you get some characters and personalities, but overall the cowboys are this a conceptual villain for the film rather than a one single person that is like, like even they did, I think, a really good job of not making Curly Bill, who kind of felt like the leader from the beginning, right? Like he was the one kind of giving orders at the beginning in when they were shooting up the wedding. And then later on, but they did a good job of not making him seem like this mastermind, all powerful, like the true head of it. And even they even got rid of him, you know, like a little ways into the movie, right? Like, he goes into prison, then he gets out, but then he dies, you know, where there's still a lot of work to be done. So I kind of enjoyed that the cowboys were this concept to be feared rather than an individual character.
Yeah, no, for sure. I wonder, I don't know who has top billing, probably Kurt Russell, but then I feel like second billing for this movie should be mustaches.
Yeah.
Because the mustache game is out of control in this movie. Kurt Russell's sporty one, Sam Neill, of course, bringing his stash. Even Val Kilmer's got
Sam Elliott.
Sam Neill.
If Sam Neill was in this movie, it would be even
what
further.
What did I say?
You said Sam Neill.
Sam Neill. Sorry, Sam Elliott.
Just more stacking of the cast.
That would be amazing.
Although Sam Neill does rock a pretty sweet mustache in Peaky Blinders. So watch that if you haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah. I've watched like the first season. I need to maybe get back into it.
Oh, it's so good.
Speaking of Curly Bill really fast.
Yeah.
He has these boots that have four aces on them.
Each
boot has aces. I wrote down aces boots.
That's like one of the opening shots. It's so weird.
It's so weird. I feel like it's unnecessary. It's distracting. And it seems like something you would buy at like a theme park where they had like a Western like stunt show. Like it looks like something you buy in the gift shop
or a Halloween store for a cowboy outfit.
It was very silly.
And it was superfluous. They never addressed it. It never had anything to do with his character. You're right. It felt very unnecessary and weird.
Maybe it was an actual detail. Cause I feel like, the details also, I think, help make this movie, because there's like not to steamroll over you, but of course they had like the detailed theater scene, which I think was like so well done of like how they would actually present like, you know, melodrama and, you know, in Shakespeare to, you know, these folks out in the West.
Yeah.
In the time there is, I think it's only one shot, but there's like this, what is it? A wagon talking about equal pay for women,
right? Yeah, there's women like sitting on a wagon, and it has a banner over it that said,
"Yeah." It was like there's like little details like that. Like that's only in there for like a second.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
It was great world building, which I think is part of the reason this was so enjoyable. Was it felt kind of real?
Before we get too far away from that comment,
yes,
I want to talk about boots for a second. So we just spoke about Curly Bill's boots. About, you know, 2/3 of the way through the movie, at the train station scene, when, you know, the Earps are leaving, but Wyatt Earp sticks around. And that was the first point, I think, at which you mentioned, oh, he's got spurs now, right? Because I think that's where he, like, kind of slices Ike's face. He kicks Ike down on the ground, and then he, like, cuts his face with his spur, and we're like, oh, he's got spurs now. From that moment on, I don't know if the HD version also has high-definition audio or did some sound mixing differences to the original version. But I almost became annoyed by how overbearing the sound of his spurs. I don't know if you noticed this. It was like,
no, it stood out in my mind. Yes,
it was very noticeable. Whenever Wyatt Earp was in the scene after that, from that moment on, it was like, just want to remind the audience he's got spurs. By the way, I don't know if you noticed this. He's got spurs now. This man's serious because he's got spurs. Like constantly hearing that ringing sound.
Yeah.
And there was that time where he goes to Doc Holliday's bedside, like when Doc Holliday is kind of not pretending to be ill, but he's like, he says, I can't go with you to go fight Ringo. And it kind of ruined that scene a little bit for me, to be honest, because he's like walking over to the bedside and then it's just this touching moment and you hear ding, ding, ding.
It didn't distract me to that. I didn't notice it, and I appreciated the sound design. But I didn't think it was too overpowering. But I did notice it, and I was like, that's, I mean, the sound mixing. I'd have to see if this won any awards. I feel like cinematography was really great.
Cinematography was beautiful.
Like those sweeping landscapes.
Yeah.
Were incredible.
I will say, in terms of audio, the soundtrack was beautiful. Really well done. I loved that it was this like mix between, there was really obviously very heavy Western style themes in there, which felt really nice and very mood setting and everything. But it also just had enough of a dose of your classic epic movie, right? Like, even beyond the level of specifically Western tropes and themes in music, it had this great overall John Williams-esque style, epicness to it, which I thought was a really beautiful blend. I loved the soundtrack. We watched the credits, you know, we stuck around, you and I, and kept talking and watched the credits afterwards, and the soundtrack plays over that. And I just was like, God, this is such a beautiful soundtrack. Really well done.
It's surprising because, let's see, the score is composed by Bruce Broughton, who I've never heard of.
Wait, is that really? I saw a different name when we watched the credits for the music. Is that right?
Well, could it have been the director? Because I had never heard of this director either, George P. Cosmatos.
Yes, you're right. That was the name I was thinking of. So
I was
that's the director.
I've never heard of this director. I've never heard of this composer.
Is there anything else Cosmatos has done?
I'm looking at the composer. He did the Monster Squad.
He did the director did Rambo
Silverado.
First Blood Part 2. Oh, and Leviathan. Yeah, I mean you referenced the cinematography. That was really good. We shared a comment during the stream where we were talking about the HD quality, and I was saying like we were noticing some of the things that HD enables, which I will say I think sometimes HD can do a disadvantage to older movies because it's like the Hobbit effect. And by that I mean, you know, when The Hobbit came out and there was all this uproar or commotion about it being in 60 frames per second, and people were saying like Gandalf's staff looked like a prop, like it actually looks like a prop instead of, because it's a little bit more real. And I'll say the same kind of struck me for Tombstone, where the high street, I keep calling it the high street, the main, what do you call it? Like the main alley, the main, like,
yeah,
the road that all the
main
stores are on. Main street. Yeah. It because there's some parts of it where you're like, that just like looks a little bit off to me, where you can almost tell that it's a lot, you know, a lot where they built maybe the facades of a lot of buildings and maybe some sides for the sides of buildings for certain shots, but that you walk through those doors and there's nothing really inside. So I don't know. Maybe they did a lot of detail, and you just can't tell.
The daytime stuff I thought looked great. Like it looked like an actual
good point.
Bare bones kind of Western town. It was the night stuff was like you really got that feeling of it being on a lot.
Yeah.
And there's a scene in the rain, and I pointed this out where, and I wonder if they do this in most movies. I don't know, but. So the rain, it was just basically over Kurt Russell.
Right.
Because if you looked in the background, it wasn't in rain. You would expect rain to be on the rest of the main street.
Yeah.
But you didn't see it. It was like the circle.
It was wet, but it wasn't. You didn't see the rain hitting the ground you did just right around Kurt Russell. Yeah.
Which I imagine that maybe that was something they could get away with before HD.
Right. Yeah. If it's blurred out enough, then it just looks like it fades into the distance.
Exactly.
The rain. Yeah.
So fun. I'm looking at, I don't know if you took any notes. I'm looking to see. So in the middle of this, I talked about, I was like, because right now, David, I am playing Red Dead 2.
Nice. Yeah.
And I was like, man, I want to continue this. Like, I'm going to watch Deadwood. And you kind of blew our minds, mine and Tim's, by mentioning you had a connection to the world of Deadwood.
Yes.
If you want to talk about this,
I'm happy to. Let me look up see if I can find the details. Okay. Well, I'll share what I know off the top of my head. So,
okay.
I have not seen Deadwood. I have not seen the show. So, if there are fans of Deadwood out there, I apologize for getting anything wrong. But my understanding is that Deadwood is a show that takes place in Deadwood, South Dakota, and centers around the time period of the Gold Rush in the 1800s, in Western South Dakota. And my ancestors, my family, my grandfather's side, my grandfather was actually born in Rapid City, South Dakota, and his His father, I believe, was also born there, I'm pretty sure. But his grandfather, so my great-great-grandfather, no, you know what? My great-grandfather. Maybe I'll start using names to make this a little bit clearer.
20 minutes later.
My grandfather, Jack Levinson, born in Rapid City, South Dakota. His father, Joseph Levinson, born in Wisconsin, moved to Rapid City for the gold rush. And his father was an immigrant from Eastern Europe. But there is a character. They opened a series of jewelry stores. There were some of the kind of Jewish settlers who came to Rapid City and some of the other towns around Western South Dakota, including Deadwood, and opened some jewelry stores. There were a few of them. I think they had three stores in three different towns. I don't know where the third one was, but one was Deadwood and one was Rapid City. And it was all about Black Hills gold, which is a very unique kind of type of gold. They were making Black Hills jewelry out of this, which is beautiful.
Gold!
Is that your prospector voice?
That's the prospector who today is the day. Either he finds something or he's starves to death.
he's having a day. It's a big day for him regardless. Yeah. Yeah. So if you get a chance, listeners and Foster, you should Google Black Hills gold jewelry because it is beautiful. It's quite stunning.
Mm-hmm.
And so they opened a bunch of jewelry stores and one of them was in Deadwood. And so I believe that there is, because there's quite a bit of history around Jewish pioneers to Western South Dakota and the stores and the businesses that they opened up. And so if I'm not mistaken, there was some work in the consulting of Deadwood that went into looking at the history of some of these early pioneers. And one of the characters in Deadwood, one of those jewelry store owners, is based on one of my relatives. I don't remember if it's my great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather. But also, if you go to like Rapid City, South Dakota, and you go down the main street there, there is a stone building that still has etched, the sign still is etched into the building, and it says Levinson. So that's my mother's maiden name, my ancestor's name. So that's pretty cool. And that is one of those Levinson stores in Rapid City is where Wild Bill Hickok, also who was mentioned, I believe, in Tombstone,
yes,
was shot. And I don't know if he was killed, but he was shot there.
Dang. I know. Yeah. That's a really cool connection.
Yeah, I love that. I didn't expect that to have anything to do with Tombstone when we watched it, but it came up.
I'm fairly familiar with South Dakota because for some reason my parents really liked to take vacations there.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And by the third or fourth time, my brother and I were like, no, we don't want to go.
It's got some beautiful scenery, but it's definitely beautiful. There's a lot of long, kind of boring drives to get places.
Yeah. Of course, but, you know, Crazy Horse is cool. Mount Rushmore, yeah, of course.
The Black Hills, the Needles.
The Black Hills.
Yeah.
We've covered a lot. Again, a lot of great lines in this, including Val Kilmer. He's like, I'm your Huckleberry.
I didn't think you had it in you.
I'm your Huckleberry. Why, Johnny Ringo. You look like somebody just walked over your grave.
Oh yeah.
I was like, what does that mean? But I guess I'm here for it.
There were a lot of Doc Holliday lines that went over my head, to be honest. I mean, yes. He's got some really great intellectual lines. He does all that stuff about hypocrisy towards the end.
Yes.
You know, edging closer to hypocrisy and things like that. I loved that. That was very clever and intellectually written. But a lot of the stuff he says, like I'm your Huckleberry, I was just like, what?
Yeah. and then Kurt Russell has a great no. Like towards
and
the
then,
end of the film,
yeah, when
he's he's charging into the like that
across the river
creek, yeah,
yeah, no,
so good, yeah. And here's the thing, like I really appreciated the fact that they put time into the characters. They really thought about the dialogue because all those westerns from like the 50s and 60s, they're a dime a dozen, and they're so cookie cutter. Like,
okay,
you know, and I know I'm looking at it with, you know, modern eyes, but I'm not really interested in that. And this is the way, I guess I'm doing a John Wayne, like, this is the way we talk. Come on, boys.
Right.
And of course, the Native Americans tend to be villains a lot of the time, which, of course, you know, that's not great. So I appreciated the fact that they spent some time with the characters, they developed them, and they had intelligent dialogue. And really cool, like, ideas. Yeah, like Doc Holliday brings up kind of, I guess, this kind of gray area that comes up in the film. And the fact that they're like, they have that back and forth, Doc Holliday and Ringo in Latin was really
fun. Yeah. That was really, really cool. I loved that. Yeah, I mean, I'll say it still is a, you know, as romanticized, I think, as the classic Westerns that you're kind of talking about, right? It still has quite a bit of that romanticization of it. And in many ways, it feels like a hurrah or an homage to a sort of golden age of Westerns, because this is early 90s that this movie came out. So it's like towards the end of probably, one would say, you know, a whole bunch of great Western flicks.
Yep.
And actually, it was, who's the Mitchum? What's his face? Robert Mitchum is the guy who did the narrator Mitchum. Voice. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like a famous kind of original Western movie star, I believe. So it really seems to be hinting at an homage towards those movies. And yet, you're right, there's something about it, and maybe it's the modernity of it, that makes it feel really like unique. It kind of separates it from the pack and makes it feel a little more intellectual, a little more deep, more rounded out characters, more interesting characters, and just a really, maybe it's because it has a historical backing to it, you know, a bit of a historical backing.
Yeah.
It makes it feel like it's more powerful. I really, really enjoyed it. Two thumbs up.
I really enjoyed it. I think the action was done really well. I think I liked the fact that the gunfights were like a little messy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think you really had people flying like 10 feet backwards or anything like that. But there was times when it needed to be real and kind of grisly, it was.
Yeah.
You got it. I mean, Bill Paxton's character, I think he never shot anybody before, was the impression I got. And so he's kind of dealing with that, the trauma of that. And that gunfight, is that moment when they march down the street? This is what, like 2/3 of the way in or close to the halfway point? Is that technically the gunfight at the OK Corral?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah.
When it's Earp, his brothers, Doc Holliday, and what, they face down like Ike and a few other.
Yeah, just a handful of them, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I'm not sure. I'm sure my brother-in-law or listeners could shout out and tell us.
If you have any like interesting facts, I mean, don't shame us into getting things wrong, but you know, we'll take some feedback and.
I mean, my gut would say yes, right? Because that felt that I think that was a corral. It seemed like you know that was a place to stop and let your horses off and stable them up and get some water and things like that.
And it was okay.
It seemed okay. Yeah.
It was. State were they in?
Arizona, right? I believe they filmed a lot of it in Tucson, but Tombstone is a real town in Arizona and still is to this day.
Why are so many of these towns like kind of bleak sounding? Deadwood, Tombstone.
It's a fair point. Like, I mean, I think many of them were mining towns to begin with, or you know, just like stopping points for pioneers. And maybe it was just to reflect the harsh conditions of it. Maybe there was some element of not trying to scare people off, but just trying to make it seem like this kind of bad.
You gotta be a little, I think you gotta be a little crazy. You know, Patton Oswalt has like a bit in his stand-up about this. You kind of have to be a little of a sociopath or psychopath to, you know, bring progress to these wild, uninhabited lands. You know what I mean? And like,
the mayor character at the beginning talks about how they're an up-and-coming town, right? And they're and when we first get that scene where Doc meets the Earps, he's catching up back up with the Earps, and they're talking about the town starting to boom, and I think Wyatt Earp suggests building a racetrack. He's like, oh, are we ready for that? Is this town ready for that? Yeah, we're growing. We're growing fast. Yeah, I am really fascinated by that aspect of it. I have just recently played Red Dead Redemption 2, and I love those elements of it, right? The idea of these like budding towns and, you know, what are the new construction buildings that are being added? Yeah. Well, now there's a doctor in town. Now there's a, you know, another general store or a church or whatever. And so as these towns are starting to grow and get all the elements of a true town.
It is really, really fascinating. I bet this is accurate. The amount of spitting that takes place in the Old West. So much spitting. Everybody spits in this.
Yeah. Especially Sam Elliott. I think more than anyone else, he was the spitter.
There were some spittoons that were featured.
Yeah.
By the way, in that theater scene where some guy's spitting in a spittoon,
right?
I was getting annoyed, part of me, just because we are actors. I was let him do the show.
Yeah.
I was like, quit interrupting. I know we got to nail in the point here that you guys are like bullies and everything, but let him do Henry the V.
Have guns that you brought in.
Let them do Faust. Shut up.
Yeah. No, I felt the same way. I was particularly annoyed by it and just like irked and bothered.
Oh, I was so bothered by it. But again, yes, that's just the details, like in that scene and in the town, just the world building was so great.
Yeah.
I mentioned there was one point where I laughed out loud. I don't know if you had another moment where I think it's in the Oriental. It's in one of the saloons where Johnny Ringo is kind of facing off against Doc Holliday. This is when they have their Latin exchange, and Johnny Ringo, they're like, oh, Johnny Ringo, he's amazing. And he spins his pistol for a very long time, almost long enough to be comedic.
Yes.
Like, you think he's going to holster it? Nope, it's back out. Here it comes again. It's back. Because he's like, he's just kind of like beating his chest there in front of Doc Holliday. And Doc Holliday's just like drinking, I'm assuming like whiskey or something, out of a little tin cup.
Very small tin cup.
Very tiny cup. Yeah. And so
like those tin cups that you use to put your tea bag in when you want to take it out of your mug.
Yes, exactly. It's very small. Maybe I don't. It's like a shot and a half or something. Maybe two shot glasses worth, 2 ounces or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's got this cup, and then his response is to twirl his cup, imitating Johnny Ringo. And I did laugh out loud. It was funny. And Val Kilmer just plays it so well.
Yeah, I mean that I think that was beautifully written and perfect for Doc Holliday, for the character, right? I love that. I think that was so funny. It was him being like playing along, but also being like, this is a silly, stupid thing we're doing. Like, we're two men trying to overcompensate or whatever. So it's him acknowledging that.
Yes, and everybody in the place is kind of like laughing.
Yeah.
And Johnny Ringo is like so deflated.
Yeah. Yeah.
After that. And by the way, like the plot, basically, I don't think we've really talked about it, but basically the cowboys have the run of Tombstone. The Earps show up. Wyatt is like, I'm retired. He's reluctant. But after the cowboys wound his Verge and kill his younger brother, then he's like, OK, we're going to mop up this town and clean up. And Doc Holliday helps him and they win. Surprise. The good guys win. Doc Holliday does kill Ringo, which was a pretty great scene. You think it's going to be Wyatt Earp because Ringo's like, hey, because Wyatt had killed, was it Curly Bill?
Right. Yeah.
And then Ringo takes over the cowboys and he's like, hey, we're going to meet one on one. But Doc Holliday is the one who shows up and Ringo is, you know, of course, not very excited about that because we get the feeling Doc Holliday is the only one who could beat him in a quick draw.
Right. Yeah.
And
then we get a beautiful and tearful goodbye to Doc Holliday at the end.
Yes.
Wyatt Earp comes and visits him and tries to play poker with him one last time. He plays poker for him a little bit. Because Doc Holliday's, you know, bedridden and can't move.
Yeah, forces like poker on him and he's like, just leave. And props to this movie for letting men feel emotion and having an emotional connection and a relationship to each other. And he's like, you know, if you care for me, just I want you to go.
And then he leaves behind the flipbook of his adventures. Wyatt Earp wrote him a little flipbook with him.
My friend Doc Holliday by Wyatt Earp.
Yeah. I wonder if that has any element of historicism to it, because it just felt
like a very
specific detail that they must have pulled that from some suggestion of history.
It really feels like that. And then at the very end, by the way, Wyatt is married. His wife, the movie kind of paints her as troubled and, I guess, a little awful, addicted to opium.
A bit of an addict, yeah.
basically letting us know it's okay that he can pursue Josephine.
Yeah, right. Permission, yeah.
And he ends up with her at the end, which is really sweet. I love the fact that he was like, his speech at the end is really great too. He's like, I have nothing. He's like, I have no dignity left. I have no money. But he's like, but I'm here
yeah,
for you.
He says, I have no pride or dignity, but why? What?
Yeah.
What took away your pride and dignity in this movie? Did I miss that part? Because
I think that was the reason you went, that you had your reckoning.
Yeah, exactly. To save your pride and dignity. Yeah, I mean, also, I think, part of it is that they paint him, by saying he's a peacekeeper? No, a peace. But so they really paint him over the course of the film as someone who, they never really call it justice, but who's really pushing for justice and order and like fairness, just being
yes.
good humans. And so I think they try to paint it a little bit as not a story about revenge. You know, even though that's like the trigger for it is
right.
Sam Elliott being wounded and Bill Paxton being killed. But that he, I think they even have a line where Doc Holliday says he's not after vengeance. He's just after, I don't remember what he says, but something like order.
I think he said a reckoning.
A reckoning. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just having people get what's coming to them.
Yes. And trying to balance the scales.
Right.
A little bit.
So maybe that's him losing his pride and dignity because he's giving that up for the people, for the town.
Yes.
I don't know.
Okay, by the way, I have one little criticism about the movie is we have Billy, played by Jason Priestley, who is mm-hmm. initially with the cowboys, even though they bully him, they make fun of him and, like, harass him.
He's so moved by the St. Crispin speech.
Yes, he's very moved, and they kind of, like, I think, they make fun of him for that, for how dare he get lost in the theater. And he's sad, like, when this war is starting, because he's sad, after the showdown at the OK Corral.
Yeah.
But eventually he comes around. I can't remember what, like, turns him around, because he's a deputy, right? He's some kind of deputy.
Is he? What makes you say that?
He had a badge, and he said he was a deputy.
I don't remember that part, but I do remember, so we get... The three standout moments for Billy that I remember are first in the theater, where we see he's like, he reminds me of what's the girl's name who's part of the Jets in West Side Story, who like wants to be with the Jets, but they keep making fun of her because she's quote a girl and really isn't supposed to be with the gang.
I know who you mean. I don't remember the character's name.
Billy reminded me of that type of, that's that role in a gang, which is like he's not really a tough guy. He's trying to pretend to be tough, but he rolls with the gang or tries to be with them. And so that was a theater moment. And then we get after the shootout, he's really upset by, having lost a lot of his friends or the fellow gang members. And he's walking down and he says, I'm nothing, but if I were something, I'd fight you right here and now.
Yeah.
And then that third moment is when he, with what's left of the cowboys, quite a few of them, including, I think, the county sheriff, they stumble across the wagon after Billy Zane's character has been killed. The actor's been killed.
Yes.
And shot. And Josephine's in the cart with him. And Billy and Jason Priestley sees that the actor's been killed and remembers being so moved by that speech.
Yeah.
And Josephine says, like, he's trying to bring something beautiful into your ugly world and you killed him for it or whatever. And that seems like the turning point, right, for Jason Priestley.
Yes.
Where he's sort of like,
but
we did something wrong here.
There was no payoff. I expected to see him join with Wyatt in at least one of those, like, because there's a lot of montages of them exacting justice. And I was like, that's great. I love that there was this arc for this character. But what was the payoff? I did. That was my only kind of like little criticism.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I guess what we're just supposed to assume, because we do get that moment where, what is it, the McMasters, I think, show up and like take off their red sashes and say, we're with you.
Michael Rooker. We did not mention Michael Rooker. Yondu is in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yondu. Yeah. Yondu.
Though I always know him as the dad from Mallrats, but.
Yeah. I mean, so we get that moment where they come in and sort of give their... give their swords, pledge their swords, if you will.
Yes, they throw down their sashes. This is...
To the Earps.
I think it's the same night, that same stormy night, because they, again, they don't want to be associated with this level of violence and murdering, because like it's not, I guess it's not like fun and games anymore.
Right.
It's getting like too real, and they're not okay with it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I'm sort of presuming that what the payoff for Jason Priestley, for Billy, is that Billy and his group, you know, whoever's still riding with him, are sort of deciding that they're no longer with the Cowboys in that moment. And therefore, we can just assume that, okay, that means that the Cowboys have lessened in their strength.
Sure.
And it's just further progression of seeing the impact of the Earps on the Cowboys, that they have fewer to fight. But you're right, we don't get any kind of, like, real satisfying payoff later.
Like, if he had, like, I mean, they're already taking, you know, liberties with the historical nature of this. Let him, there should be a moment where, like, somebody's going to kill, like, Wyatt or something, and that cowboy gets shot, and it's like, oh, where'd that shot come from? And Billy steps out. Like, that would have been so cool.
No, I would have been cool. It would have been, like superficially satisfying, but I also think I like that they, I mean, we had that scene where he says, I'm nothing, but if I were something, I'd fight you. So I like that he's got this role of not a fighter, right? He never is a fighter in the movie. And so he just, the impact that he can have is lessening the power that the Cowboys hold and leaving them, right?
Right.
By reducing their numbers, that lessens their power. You know, they hold That's less true. Sway over people.
I totally see that. I know we're running out of time.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can hear my stomach gurgling.
No, I didn't.
but there's one character I just want to talk about very briefly.
Yeah.
Is Ike. Yeah. So Ike has this weird through line in the movie. He is one of the Cowboys. He's like older. He's very much on the greasy, dirty scale. I think he first has a big moment when Curly Bill has killed the marshal. It seems like possibly on accident, because he's high on opium.
Yeah.
And he's like had this like a revelation, and the revelation is to pull his pistols and just shoot around the town. And this is when the marshal is like really reluctant to go out and deal with this.
Right.
But he does. And it looks like Curly Bill is going to hand over his guns. He flips them upside down but still shoots the marshal.
Right.
In the chest, killing him. And so this is when Wyatt actually goes out there. He's like, this guy is going to stand trial. People are like, let's hang him. And then Ike steps up and he's like, you better let him go. And then that's when Wyatt points a gun to his head. And then there's that great line. He's like, I'm kind of messing it up here, but he's like, you better back up or I'm going to make your head. I'm going to turn your head into a canoe.
So go home.
I swear to God, Law Dog, you don't step aside, we'll tear you apart.
You die first, get it? Your friends might get me in a rush, but not before I make your head into a canoe. You understand me?
He's bluffing. Let's rush him.
No. He ain't bluffing.
Oh, yes. Okay, I forgot that was directed at Ike, but yeah.
Yes, and then...
Well, I think you and I, we all joked about that line for the rest of the movie, because it's a really weird...
Yeah.
I mean, if the canoe had a hole in it, right? Like...
Yeah. I guess so. I guess that would make sense, but then people are like, he's bluffing. And then Ike is staring into Wyatt's determined eye. He's like, he's not bluffing.
Yee. Yeah. I mean, this goes to our Billy conversation, too. So Ike, Stephen Lang, it was played by Stephen Lang, who I know from the Avatar movie. That's like my biggest knowledge of him. But
wait,
he's like the military guy. He's like, I think a colonel, maybe.
No. Is that him?
Oh, yeah. Stephen Lang? Yeah.
No.
Oh, for sure.
I got to look this up while you're talking.
Oh, okay.
Continue.
No, but that's great. I mean, the fact that you say that is exactly my next point, which is like...
It is him! Oh, my God!
The way that they outfit him is a little bit comical, almost. He's like...
Yes, he is. He's very
Disney,
comical.
Disney Western gang cowboy, right?
Yes.
Like, he feels, like, very Disney-esque. And even in his kind of mannerisms and the way he portrays the character, he feels Disney-esque. Not just the outfit, but his speech and everything feels a bit satirical, almost, or parody. But, yeah, I sort of like the character, because it's another example. It's kind of like Billy, we were talking about just now with Jason Priestley, where he is, you know, he is a fighter, but he's also just an example of... of the sway a gang can have over people, right? Like, I think no one is happier to be part of this gang. It feels more honored to be part of this gang, to be welcomed into this gang than Ike, because he's constantly the voice box for the gang.
Yeah, I disagree, though. I don't think he's a fighter. Like, he surrenders, I think, 3 times in this movie.
Well, I guess I mean a fighter in, like, the tough guy sense. Like, he's ready to put up his fist for anything.
Yeah, he's all bluster, though.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I really thought he was going to die at one point. I was like, Wyatt, just shoot this guy. He's keeps turning up like a bad penny. You know, the moment things get intense, he's like, no, don't shoot me. And he, like,
right.
In the montage, even he takes off his red sash, you know, while they're.
They're riding after him. Yeah.
Yeah. His comrades have been shot. Somehow he makes it through to the end of this movie. But then the credit sequence, Robert Mitchum lets us know that he dies like 2 years later in a robbery or something.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. He was apprehended.
I can't believe that is Stephen Lang. Stephen Lang from Avatar, from Don't Breathe. You might know him from that. He looks like he's the same age.
I know, right? When I saw him, I was like, oh, that's Stephen Lang. But how old is he? Because
he looks old, like he's like 55.
He doesn't look young in Tombstone.
But yeah, he's like, that's crazy. I mean, man, he was like getting up to like 60 in Avatar.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Yeah. Man.
Who, by the way, I know this is a deep pull, but Stephen Lang was put as, did you ever play the Uncharted series?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So there's that character Sully, who is in some of the earlier ones, at least, and I haven't played the later ones, but he's in the earlier Uncharted games. And they made a like fan film of Uncharted, the same way that Assassin's
right.
Creed, Ubisoft made one for Assassin's Creed 2. And I think Stephen Lang played Sully in that. So that's a deep pull. Most people probably won't have seen that.
Was that the fan film with Nathan Fillion?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
As Drake?
I didn't actually see it. I just saw teasers and clips for it. It was just a short. It was like a little short, quick thing. Yeah.
Man, that's crazy. Again, another cast member I had no idea was in this. And it's just a joy to see them. This movie, I won't say it's the greatest movie ever. I will say it's it is a great movie and it's a fantastic Western.
Yeah. My verdict, which means nothing and has no credibility behind it, is 8 out of 10 on my scale. With obviously Lord of the Rings, The Returning of the King being a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I'll give it a 9 out of 10. Yeah, this was great. I want to get into Westerns now. I'm really enjoying Red Dead 2. You could tell it's my first playthrough because I'm being very like honorable. I don't want to.
I do the same thing. Yeah.
I'm not robbing a lot of people. It's so fun to rob a train, though.
It is. It's very fun. You know, I will say I actually didn't finish the game. I've lied. I've been saying I played and finished the game, but I basically almost finished the game. I played through most of it and did a lot of it. And then I sort of just left and I got kind of tired of it and started playing some other things. But then I think seeing Tombstone has made me be like, you know what? It was really fun. And I want to explore that timeline, that world a little bit more. And especially after the episode that you gave us of Audio Obscura with Laura the other day, I want to see some of those cool Easter eggs. So I might either go back to my playthrough or even start a new one and start playing around with it.
So that was Tombstone.
Yes. A joyous homage to Western classics. 2 thumbs up from David.
2 thumbs up. And those thumbs, they're wearing spurs from me.
Clink, 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 clink. Thank you to the Obscurians who suggested / demanded that we watch it on pain of death. You're welcome. From now on, I will be more familiar. And should any mysterious clues come up in the future of Audio Obscura, then I will know what they're referring to.
Yeah. And if you want us to do like a watch along thing with some friends for like Top Gun or something else, let us know. Cause we're always looking for an excuse to hang out together. So
yeah, for sure. Yes, if you ever are disappointed in either of us for not being aware of something in popular culture, let us know. Let us know your disappointment.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed this this bonus episode. And we'll see you for one of our mysteries.
Bye.
Bye. Partner.
I'm bringing hell with me.
Audio Obscura is a weekly audio mystery podcast. Never miss an episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Send your audio mystery suggestions to audioobscurapodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to support the show, you can share it or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.